Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. It's your future. Let Zurich help you protect it. Talk to us today about life and serious illness cover.
Carol, thank you very much indeed for that. You may have heard in the headlines there today, Israel has recalled its negotiators from Qatar, claiming Hamas is not interested in talks and lamented damage caused by yesterday's UN ceasefire vote. Well, the ceasefire deadlock comes as the humanitarian situation in Gaza continues to deteriorate. My next guest has worked as a consultant surgeon in Gaza for over 15 years. But in a recent presentation to the United Nations in New York, he said he was not remotely prepared for what he encountered on his most recent Gaza trip in late December. I'm joined by Professor Nick Maynard. Professor Maynard, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much for asking me to join you today.
I might give listeners a very short warning that this may be a little bit distressing, some of the content. I know, Nick, you're at home in Kinsale, you have family in Kinsale, so you're in more pleasant surroundings. You're very welcome home to Ireland. But you're due back to Gaza next month, and I want to talk to you about your last visit to Gaza, because you told the United Nations last week, I think, that you still wake up at night thinking of what you saw at Al-Aqsa Hospital. So what did you see there?
Yes, it was horrific, to be honest. As you mentioned, I've been going to Gaza since 2010. I've operated in their operating theatres out there. I've worked in the hospitals for many years. And I really thought I'd be prepared for what I was going to see. But when I worked at Al-Aqsa Hospital just a few weeks ago, I saw the most appalling injuries. And frankly, such scenes that I never thought I would witness in my years as a doctor. Most of the injuries I saw were on women and children. I'm a surgeon, so I spent most of my time operating on appalling blast injuries to the abdomen, the chest. But I spent time in the emergency room and saw many children in particular coming in, many children dead, many children with the most awful injuries, severe burns, severe traumatic amputation, sometimes children having lost two or even three limbs. But it was the burns in particular that struck me. And one memory which will haunt me till the day I die was that of a 8-year-old little girl that came in with severe burns from a bomb attacking one of the camps near the hospital. And her burns were so severe that we knew she would not survive. She wouldn't have survived if she'd been in Ireland or England or the US. They were so bad. And they'd affected particularly her face. And the burns on her face were so bad that you could see the bones of her face through the burnt flesh. But we knew these were fatal burns, but she was still alive. And our priority was to try and allow her to die peacefully and with some dignity, but we were not able to do that, sadly. That day in Al-Aqsa Hospital, we had run out of morphine, so there was no strong pain relief at all that we could give her, so we couldn't help with her pain. And her screams will haunt me forevermore. What made it worse, not only did she die in agony, but there was also nowhere for her to die in private. The hospital was so crowded that she ended up on the floor of the emergency room in a corner because there was nowhere else for her to go. So she died in public in agony. And I would never have dreamt that I could have seen something like that in a civilized world.
How long did it take her to die, I wonder?
About 4 or 5 hours. Awful, quite awful.
Screaming in agony for 4 hours, was she?
Absolutely, and in public. I mean, again, the whole of the emergency room was covered with people with terrible injuries. And there were two other patients who I was involved with who were dying at the same time as her on the floor of ER with catastrophic head injuries, which were untreatable, but from which they took many hours to die.
Do you mind if I ask you one more question about the little 8-year-old girl? Because sometimes a conflict like this, when you talk about one singular person's experience, can tell an awful lot. Did she have parents or family there with her?
No, they were all killed in the bomb blast. So she came in alone. She'd been orphaned already. And that was a feature of many of the children I saw there. There's an acronym in Gaza which should never exist in a civilized world. And the acronym is WCNSF, which stands for Wounded Child, No Surviving Family. So many of the children we saw who came in were orphaned already because their parents had been killed.
Well, maybe this is an impossible question to answer, but was that the most horrific case that you came across?
I think it was. I mean, I could talk for hours about the awful things I saw. And of course, we only saw a small proportion of the bomb victims. Many of them were killed immediately by the bombs. There are many other examples that I've described to you. I operate on many patients with awful bomb injuries. But I think that one was probably the worst.
One doctor, Nick, from MSF, said recently that doctors were faced with horrific decisions of having to intubate and perform amputations on children and adults without anaesthetic. And it's just horrific, isn't it?
Yeah, and I witnessed that. I remember vividly one girl with an appalling fractured leg. She survived. She didn't have a fatal injury, but her leg was badly displaced and had to be straightened rapidly in order to preserve the blood supply to straighten out the blood vessels. And again, this was the same day we had one of the many days we had no morphine. So the orthopedic surgeon had to come and straighten her leg without being able to give her any pain relief at all. And again, I can hear her screams now.
And then we're told by clinicians like yourself and aid agencies that the war has been particularly punishing for pregnant and lactating women and children under 2 years old.
Yeah, I mean, there's 50,000 women who are pregnant in Gaza, something like 180 births a day. So there are women giving birth in the open or in the shelters. There is no antenatal, no perinatal, no postnatal care at all. The malnutrition is getting worse and worse, and that is a particular problem in pregnant women and babies and children under two. And of course, the malnourished women who are giving birth can't breastfeed, can't produce milk, so the children can't, the babies can't breastfeed. So you'll be aware now that there's been the north of Gaza is in imminent danger of being designated a famine area. So the malnutrition is beyond belief now, and it's no longer a problem that can be dealt with by food. This is an acute medical emergency when you're that severely malnourished.
So what's happening to the newborn babies if the mothers aren't lactating? Is there food?
There's no food. I mean, I've spoken to people who are living off animal feed. I've spoken to people who are living off bird seed because they've run out of animal feed. So babies will be starving to death. The newborn babies, they can't breastfeed, they'll be starving.
And then the overall effect, Nick, on the healthcare system, I mean, it obviously can't cope now, can it?
No, I mean, it's been destroyed. I've been saying in interviews it's in a state of collapse for some weeks now. There are perhaps a couple of two or three partly functioning hospitals now. There's talk about some hospitals functioning, but even Al-Aqsa Hospital, when I was there, which was supposedly a functioning hospital, wasn't functioning properly. It could barely deal with the trauma victims. It certainly couldn't deal with all the non-traumatic illnesses and deaths. It is evident to me, having been there, that the Israeli Defense Force are targeting the infrastructure of the whole healthcare system and destroying not just the buildings, but destroying the oxygen supplies, the laboratories, the scanners, the fuel supplies. And of course, well over 400 healthcare workers have been killed, 250 have been abducted. So there seems to be a systematic dismantling of the whole healthcare system in Gaza.
And the Israeli government is still, and the Prime Minister is still talking about an invasion of Rafah, a ground invasion. What would the effect of that be, in your opinion?
It would be apocalyptic. There is nowhere for those people to go. There are no safe areas. There are literally no safe areas for those people to go. With a combination of severe malnutrition that's going on there, it would be apocalyptic. I've been to Rafah. I've been to the hospitals in Rafah just a few weeks ago. The biggest hospital in Rafah is a governmental hospital called Al-Najjar Hospital, which has got 60 beds. There's another small hospital with 20 beds, and there's an MSF hospital with 80 beds. So that couldn't begin to cope with the casualties. So it would be apocalyptic.
I'm trying to reconcile what you've told me about a potential ground invasion of Rafah with what Ophir Falk, who's a senior advisor to Benjamin Netanyahu, told me in this programme when I asked him about a ground invasion of Rafah. He said that the people in Rafah would be told where to go that would be safe.
Well, I mean, there is nowhere that is safe. And there is no credibility at all to the statement that they can go somewhere that's safe. They've been designating Al-Mawasi, for example, as a safe area. That's where I stayed. There's been aerial strikes on Al-Mawasi. There are, beyond any doubt, no safe areas in Gaza. And it is simply not true that they will be able to go to a safe area.
I mentioned at the top that you're just back from the US and that meeting at the United Nations where you gave a presentation. And I know, Nick, that you met members of the Biden administration and members of Congress as well. And I mentioned, and we discussed it in the programme yesterday, that Israel is not impressed, to say the least, about the US abstention to a UN resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire at the United Nations yesterday. Do you support any, or do you detect, any change in mood in the US on their stance about the conflict?
Yes, I do. I mean, I was with three other doctors, American doctors who've been out in Gaza, and we met many people in the Biden administration, many people in the UN in New York a few days previously. They were all private meetings, so I can't reveal the content, but we met many senior staff members from the various departments, and I absolutely did detect a very clear message that they were very receptive to the description of the events we had seen. And we did detect a very clear change in direction, as we have done indeed with the Foreign Office in the United Kingdom as well. So I think one always has to be hopeful when thinking of Gaza. So I believe there is a subtle but steady change in direction in the administration, the US.
From the US point of view. But Israel, as I say, has recalled its negotiating team from Qatar. So I just wonder how hopeful you'd be of any ceasefire being brokered.
I think that if the changes we are beginning to see in the US administration continue, that may well postpone at the very least, if not stop the Rafah invasion. And I think we just have to hope for a ceasefire. But listen, we've been hoping for a ceasefire on both sides since October, and it hasn't happened. So it remains a catastrophic situation in Gaza. And I think we can only hope that from a humanitarian perspective, we do see that ceasefire.
Can I bring you one or two of our texts? People are listening to you. Ask the doctor, how do we make a difference? I'm here hugging my child as I can't imagine this trauma. What do you think people listening could do to help the situation?
It's a great question, that. I think people can talk about it, educate people, make people more aware. There's a lot of a big rise in civil action happening throughout the United Kingdom, throughout Ireland. I'm going to Galway City on Saturday to take part in a march and talk at it. So I would urge people to get out there, join the marches, raise their voices and protest. There are a lot of agencies taking aid to Gaza and funding healthcare workers like myself to go in. One such is Medical Aid for Palestinians. So people can certainly donate to Medical Aid for Palestinians or other agencies. I believe everyone can do something, however little, even if it's just talking out and going and protesting.
Okay. Will you return? Will you be returning to Gaza?
Yes, I'm going out there in mid-April for another spell at, okay, at probably Al-Aqsa Hospital.
You're doing a number of talks, I know, in Ireland in the next 2 weeks, including one in Kinsale on April the 4th. I think an awful lot of people will want to hear you talk. Professor Nick Maynard, thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me on your programme.